The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 556 for Sunday, June 7th, 2015.
And welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found, and we share it all. We answer the questions that we can, we share the rest with the community, and together the goal is to learn a whole lot new each and every time we get together. Sponsors for this episode include Smile Software, the PDF Pen Pro 7. We will talk about that shortly. You can see that at smilesoftware.com/geek. Harry's at harrys.com. Coupon code SHAVE5OFF gets you $5 off, and we'll talk more about that and their little Father's Day promotion coming up shortly, as well as Casper at casper.com/MGG. Coupon code MGG saves you $50 off the best sleep of your life with a brand new mattress from Casper. So we'll talk about that shortly as well. Here in San Francisco, California, I'm Dave Hamilton.
Wow. And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, on the other side of the country, John F. Braun.
And you've got motorcycles going by, John F. Braun.
You know, it is perfect. Today is one of those days that is just your perfect, I would say, New England.
There you go.
You know, about 70, not too yucky out. And the bikers, you know, including the ones that don't seem to understand what a muffler is for. are out there in force. It's great. Yeah, that's perfect. Awesome. Motorcycling or bicycling weather. Everybody's out just being crazy.
Very cool. Very, very cool, man.
How about you? What's it what's it like out in San Francisco there?
And same.
I'm not going to say Frisco or San Fran because I know residents tend to shake their fist when they hear those.
Yeah, they'll get over it.
Abbreviations. But they'll get over it. So how's San Francisco?
It's awesome. Same weather that you're having there. It's clear today. Which is good. There's all kinds of sporting events happening this afternoon, I'm told, but we're recording this show, so I will miss those. But if I fall asleep halfway through the show, I just want to explain why that might happen. I had a gig last night, but it was an early gig. It was one of our family-friendly Fling Fest rock and roll shows, and we had four different bands play. Fling was one of them, and the other three were kids' bands. We raised my daughter actually. Coordinated it, raised a ton of money for a charity called Little Kids Rock, which is an awesome. Yeah, it was an awesome thing. She has to do this for her social studies class. They have to raise money, you know, raise awareness for something. It's called a Power of One project to teach you what you can do when you're just one little person. So she raised a crap ton of money actually for this charity last night, and then but that ended at like 10:30. I'm home at like midnight. Actually, I was home long before midnight, but you know, tried to get into bed about midnight. I can't sleep after gigs. So it was a fitful night's sleep, but not really. I woke up at about, I guess I got up finally at about 4 o'clock without having really slept too much. Maybe I got a couple hours, showered, went to the airport. I had to keep myself awake on the way to the airport. And then as soon as I got on the plane in the airport, and I've thought about this for a long time, I bought one of those neck pillows. I should have brought my son's because he has one at home, but I didn't think about it until I was halfway there. So I paid the $14 in the airport and I bought one of those neck pillows, and it was the best $14 I spent all day because I wrapped that thing around my neck. I don't even remember taking off, and we were about four hours into the flight when I woke up. So I got good sleep there, and then popped back to the apartment where I'm staying here through Airbnb, and basically I ran to the grocery store quick to get some, you know, staples, cheese, apples, ice cream, beer, and here we are recording the show.
Nice.
Of course, I'm here for WWDC this week.
Yeah, I hear a few people are, and actually tomorrow I'll be watching the event, which I believe is happening starting. And you can see it, so you can see it on the Apple TV, Dave.
You know, right.
I like the Apple TV for that, so they post the Apple events. So I believe it's starting at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, and should go for about 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
But that's what
usually about 2 hours. I think that's right. Yeah, it's the WWDC keynote, so yeah, that's right. Yep.
Okay, and then you'll probably be
I got an invite
with some people about that. I'm doing oh, you did? Okay. Yes. And I'll be doing a Mac Roundtable. We're gonna have the Mac Roundtable
nice
gang digesting that and offering their commentary. So, you know, you'll see that coming out. Great. Sweet. That the group got back together. We had a little hiatus for a while, but a few people kicked our butts into gear, and maybe we'll get even you, Dave, back on the
I would love table. To be back on the show. Tomorrow does not work. So I've got actually tonight there's a Showstoppers for the first time here at WWDC. So I'll go to that event, but I think it's going to be pretty, I think it's only a dozen or so, exhibitors. And then I'll go over to SF Mac Indy, which we are happily sponsoring this year. And then,
ooh, sweet.
And then tomorrow in the evening, after the keynote and all that, there's that next event fundraiser that I always go to and that we're sponsoring again at the Cartoon Art Museum, and then the Beard Bash, where I'm actually going to do sound tomorrow night because they have live band karaoke, and it's always driven me crazy that there's 25 singers throughout the night and nobody sings the same and nobody runs sound, and so I offered to Jim.
Bash, is this Jim?
Yeah. So that's that. And then on Tuesday, I'm speaking at AltConf. I think I'm speaking at AltConf on a panel talking to developers about how best to and not to approach the press. So, and then I fly home Wednesday morning. So,
wow. Now, AltConf is the, if you couldn't manage get a ticket for WWDC, AltConf is an independent event that runs in parallel.
Couldn't or didn't want to. It's a very different thing, right? I mean, listen, WWDC is awesome because not only do you get to hear from Apple engineers on existing and of course, newly existing technologies from Apple, you also get to meet with them and talk to them and get them to solve your problems. And it's the coolest thing. I've only ever taken advantage of the labs, I think, once. And it was amazing seeing them. I think I've told the story. We had a problem where Safari wasn't compatible with our ad server in one little minor way. And I went in and they're like, oh, that's like Tim's bug. And they brought Tim over and Tim's like, great, can you replicate it? And I said, yeah. And he's like, okay, log in, do it. I did it. He's like, awesome. And he fires up Xcode, makes a little change, compiles Safari right there. And he's like, all right, now test it. I was like, yeah, that works. He's like, awesome. And he's like, I'm like, I can't take that home with me, though. He's like, yeah, no, you, absolutely not. You know, he's like, you have to wait till it's in the next release cycle. I'm like, oh, okay. But it's cool because you can, I mean, when else are you going to, you know, Apple is so closed down. It's nice to be able to do that. So that's that part of WWDC is awesome. All of it is. AltConf is sort of the human side of it, if you will, or the reaction side of what happens when you're an Apple developer and all the other kind of cool things. And they have some techie talks as well, but a lot of it is, you know, sort of what it means to be a developer and how best to hone your craft and that sort of thing.
I mean,
it's weird. Maybe because we're on a different setup, I'm using Audio Hijack 3 and obviously no outboard gear here. So all of the noise gates and all of that stuff are, are different. They're just, I mean, they're software based and they're just set differently. So it's possible we're hearing more of the noise in your area, maybe because of that, or maybe it's just one of those days, John. But anyway, so that's what I'm here for. Short trip.
Cool. And AltConf, did they, I think there was a controversy over whether they could, did they get over that, whether they could stream the keynote? I think some people were, there was a back and forth where they wanted to stream it and Apple was like, well, no. And
so they have,
like, oh,
they
come
have,
on, guys, don't be jerks about it.
Well, no, Apple's point was valid. AltConf has always streamed the keynote and they get a conference room somewhere nearby. And that's where they hold all their sessions and everything.
Yeah. And the agreement when you watch any Apple event says you can't broadcast this without express written permission, kind of like baseball and a lot of other events. And I can understand that.
It's more nuanced than that, though, John. It's that in the past, there hasn't been any problem with these community based broadcasts. In fact, before I got my invite to go to the thing, to go actually be in the room, which is great. And that's what I'm going to do. I was invited to go watch it at Twitter, right? And with some Twitter engineers and they have a thing, right? And they let some members of the public and such in to hang out with them. And that Apple's fine with that. Apple's been fine with AltConf in the past because AltConf has been 100% free of charge. They've had sponsors to cover their costs, but this year they it's still free of charge, and anybody that wants to can go in up to capacity of the room. But this year they sold hero supporter tickets for AltConf, where you paid $300, and for anything that wasn't the keynote, and this is an important distinction. For the normal sessions, like the panel that I'm on and any of the other sessions that are happening, the heroes get to go into the room up until, I think, 15 minutes before the session. So they can get in and get seats ahead of anyone else because they paid to help keep the lights on, you know, and then they kind of open it up to the great unwashed and we can all go in. But Apple saw that they were charging tickets and said, okay, no, this year, because you're charging, we can't have you charging right. people. And so there was a back and forth, and some people from Apple got involved and talked to the folks at AltConf, and it all sorted out. They said, no. You know, yes, we did do this hero ticket thing, but the heroes don't have preferred seating for the keynote. That's first come, first serve. And so I think that was sort of the sticking or the tipping point was, okay, if you're not selling access to watch it, then we'll let you go. Yeah. But they still won't let them live stream the sessions. You as a developer, if you are a registered developer, can live stream yes. WWDC just, sessions
I,
all week.
Yeah. I just renewed my membership actually, which, for those that don't know, if you want to be a part of either the iOS or OS X developer programs, it's only $99 a year. What a steal, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, man.
That's good. For me, you know, I think the biggest benefit that I get is, you know, being able to look at... So it gives you access to all of the, you know, various versions of OS X. Going way, way back, because as a developer, you need this. But what I like using it for, Dave, is to take a peek at the server version.
Right.
Because
right.
the server yeah. version of OS X has quite a few features that many people, and it's only $20. So even if I didn't have the developer thing, you know, it's $20 right now, which to me is a steal for all of the stuff that it offers. So,
hey, John, I want to take a minute before we get into the questions here, and I want to talk about our first sponsor of the show, which is Harry's at harrys.com. Now, Harry's, they sell some of the best razors and shaving gear that I've ever used. And they converted me. I was an electric razor guy for decades, basically since I was in college, certainly. And then they came on board as a sponsor and they sent me a kit, and man, I had used, you know, occasionally if my razor was like, you know, discharged or whatever, I'd always had like razors from the drugstore or whatever that I could use. And sometimes I'd do that because it, even those would get a little closer than my, you know, electric would. But man, the first time I used these Harry's razors, I was sold, because here's what they did. They looked and they said, you know, you can go to the drugstore and you can buy crappy razors and spend $25. And so they figured out how to sell you not crappy. And these are, in fact, they're better than not crappy. They're outstanding blades, and their shave cream is like silk in your fingers. I love this stuff. They have a gel, a foaming gel, and a shave cream. You can pick either one when you get a set. And here's the deal. You know, you can get these sets for like $15 if you go to harrys.com, and you know, you go and you order a set and you're good to go. The Truman set's $15. Well, coupon code SHAVE5OFF from us here at Mac Geek Gab in partnership with Harry's gets you $5 off and free shipping. So the Truman set, which comes with a handle, three blades, which are going to last you a while. These blades for me last forever. Hopefully people are, you know, needing to replace them often enough to keep Harry's in business, because these blades are awesome. So it comes with that, the three blades, and then either gel or the cream. I like the cream. I really, really like the cream. The gel's good too. Don't get me wrong. It's really nice gel. The cream is just something a little bit special. But right now, because of the month we're in here with June just having started, it's Father's Day month. And so they have a Father's Day set too. And, you know, the thing is, think about all the stuff that your dad taught you as you were growing up. And I mean, if I think of my dad, and I actually saw my dad last night, he was at the Flink Fest that I mentioned. I mean, my dad taught me a ton. I certainly wouldn't be the person I was today without my dad, and his guidance. And I'm sure you're in the same boat. And so they have a Father's Day shave set. And so now, you know, your dad, if you're a man, your dad probably taught you how to shave. Mine certainly did. But if you're female and your dad didn't teach you how to shave, he probably taught you a lot of other things. Well, now's your chance to give back. They have a really, really nice set for Father's Day. It's a $40 set. Comes in a really nice box. It's got a razor stand. I mean, it's really, really nice. You got to check this out at harrys.com. And it's $40, but shave five off, $35 for you. And, yep, free shipping. So you got to check this stuff out. It's really good. They know what they're doing there. And the folks at Harry's have been great to us here. They're friends of ours here at Mac Geek Gab, and they should be friends of yours too. Check them out. Yeah, that's right, John. You use the stuff too. So check them out at harrys.com. And the coupon code is shave the number five off. Get it? Shave five off the price. Wow. You get that little twist there that we put in? All right, harrys.com, shave five off. Thanks very much.
Wow. Did they? Harry's. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Dave, they have five blades in their...
In the cartridge is five blades.
I wonder if that's a coincidence. Because, yeah, I mean, some people think that's a gimmick, but I don't because, yeah, I still use it, even though I use a trimmer. Five blades does the trick. The single blade things that you get at the store, you know, the cheapies. I mean, if you don't cut up your face with them.
Right.
I've never had an injury from a Harry's razor, and I don't think I ever will. So
yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. Sweet. All right. Let's move on here and let's take a gander at what Bruce had to say.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, why don't you take it?
It introduced me, Dave, to so I actually got in touch with some people that I haven't been in touch with for a while. So what does Bruce have to say? Bruce says, "Hi guys, I have a project where I have a drive with about 50,000 files on it. I have another drive that has some of those same files, but also a lot of other files, all buried several layers deep. I need to end up with a single copy that contains all the files without duplicates. Doing this manually would take a really long time." Yes, it would. "Any suggestions of best tools to use? Thanks so much." And I'm going to say, Dave, the best tool for this, and actually I revisited it recently, and I'm quite happy with what I saw, and you may be surprised with what I saw. But I would say, Dave, the best tool on the Mac to deal with this sort of thing is a program called TidyUp from Hyperbolic Software. I don't know if you've used it recently, Dave. We got a copy, I think, in a goodie bag of TidyUp 3. They're now up to version 4 of TidyUp, but you can certainly still use TidyUp 3. But I would say that is the best tool to deal with any sort of duplicate. And it doesn't just, so it offers a whole bunch of search criteria. So you can certainly compare folders and have it identify duplicates, but not only does it do that, Dave, but it also has some specialized, and we'll talk, but I saw the agenda, you were very clever. It has some specialized identification abilities, which I think we'll go into more detail shortly. But I think that's the best tool to start looking at to deal with a task of this magnitude, especially with 50,000 files, because doing it manually is insane. You could write a script or automator or something, maybe, but it's crazy. You want to go to somebody who has thought long and hard about how to do this. What I like, Dave, is actually, so I fired up, so I have TidyUp 3, and actually I ran it, and so one, it gives you a number of options for what criteria you want to use to identify duplicates, whether it be just the name or the contents or all sorts of other things. But it actually surprised me, Dave, because when I ran TidyUp 3, it said, "Oh, you want to look at your Aperture library, John, for duplicates?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, I'm pretty good about managing my Aperture library. I don't have any duplicates." Well, you know what? I ran it, Dave, and it said, "Well, you know what, John? You actually do have some duplicates." I'm like, "Really?" So I got to look into that
further. Was it right?
Yes, it was correct.
Wow.
Yeah, but the number, but the second thing, Dave, so application specific, and you and I have been talking about this, as a lot of people have, because a lot of people are shaking their fist or thanking Apple for coming up with photos. But so Tidy Up 3, which you can still get and is still a perfectly fine program to use, but Tidy Up 4, Dave, so it not only can identify duplicates in Aperture and iPhoto, but guess what other program it can identify duplicates in?
Photos.
Of course. So if you want to pay the extra dough. Off top of my head, that is the program to deal with the first program to look at for identifying duplicates and eliminating them. I did a quick follow up. So Drive Genius does have a duplicate detector. It works. I would say, I'm not bashing ProSoft. I don't think it's as full featured as Tidy Up, but it's there. So if you have Drive Genius, or you're considering purchasing it, that's one of the features that it does offer. But I really got to say that, you know, Tidy Up is the way to go on the Mac for finding those duplicates in a number of different programs. And again, we'll talk about some more features shortly.
Nice.
Good.
Nice. Yeah. Cody Chandler in the chat room at MacGeekGab.com/stream also suggests Pathfinder 7 has this feature as well. Or maybe it had it before it. Actually, I'm seeing a note from 2009 that Pathfinder 6 had it as well. That was a vote. Never mind. It was a vote to add it to Pathfinder 6, and so it was added to 7. So there you go.
Yeah. I don't think either of us are Pathfinder users, Dave. I ever have been.
They recently sponsored TMO Daily Observations. And so being on the show and hearing Jeff talk about it while I was, you know, a guest on the show made me revisit it. And man, it's fantastic. I don't have it on my laptop here. I didn't think to put it on my laptop before I left, but I have it on my machine in the office. And yeah, it's like the Finder Pro. It's what it should
be. Okay, I always perceived it as kind of a Finder, a very good Finder enhancement.
Yeah.
And it's like Finder Plus, kind of like I like.
Yeah, you know, Finder Plus.
My favorite my favorite is Total Finder, and I don't think Total Finder, Total Finder is kind of light. I mean, it offers a lot of things, but yeah. I think Pathfinder offers more. So
yeah,
I'll have to give it a whirl.
Yeah, you gotta check it out.
Beg them for a code.
Yeah, I'm sure talking about it here on the show is not going to hurt you. Yep. All right. So we have a second question, and we have more than two. Good news. Mike writes, I hope you can help me with a problem with my iTunes library. It's located on my boot drive and in its normal folder. The size is 295 gigs. Sometime in the past, I copied this folder to my second hard drive named HD2. When I look there, the size is 262 gigs. Drive Genius is telling me that the hard drive 2 has some bad sectors and needs to be reformatted. When I look at the dates of the iTunes files on hard drive 2, some are recent, like today or just a few days ago. I'm concerned that if I wipe out hard drive 2, it will affect my main iTunes library considering the dates that I saw on the files. Why would there be a size difference between both libraries? Is there any way I can merge the libraries before I wipe out hard drive 2? So you're right to be concerned. It sounds like iTunes is looking there. The way you can tell is a couple of ways. Number one, go into iTunes, go into preferences. I believe it's advanced. I'm not going to launch it on my laptop because it's doing a lot of work right now. Anyway, recording the show. But I think it's advanced, John, or iTunes. I think it's in advanced where you can set the location of the iTunes library. Take a look there and just see what it says. See if it says your home folder or if it says hard drive 02. If it says your home folder, that's good news. We're heading down the path of good news because it's pointing there. Then what you want to do is go to that hard drive 2 and take a look and find out what files it's saying were modified recently. And if it's a specific song, what you're going to do is go into iTunes and get info on iTunes version of that song. take a look at the file path there, because that's going to point you to where the file exists in iTunes world. And it's possible that for whatever reason, and it could be one of a variety of reasons, iTunes is pointing to, even though the library is meant to be stored in your home folder, it's pointing there. But if either of those things, either the library in general is pointing there, or those specific files that you know have been updated recently on that drive, if that's pointing there, then yes, you do want to make sure that you save those files if you don't have them in both places. So merging, or at least copying files from your original is a good move before formatting, right? Because you need to deal with that. Although I will say, if a drive has bad sectors, I'm not convinced that reformatting it is in your best interest. Space is.
I'm going to back you up on that. I wanted to interrupt you, and I'm going to interrupt you, Dave, because
seems like
once you. Once you get bad sectors, the only time that I've seen that, or recently that I've seen that, is on my Synology, where the Synology basically reported, we got some I/O errors on the OneDrive that I'm taking care of. Just thought you'd like to know. And as soon as I saw that, Dave, I took the drive, pulled it out. Well, I did a SMART analysis, because SMART, all right, so SMART, which is a monitoring utility or technology, can tell you up or down whether a drive is good or bad. And a lot of times it doesn't do a very good job, but it can also give you a whole list of parameters of all sorts of errors that have occurred on the drive. And once I dug in and looked at this specific drive, there were tons of, I think it was read errors or write errors, whatever parameter, because Synology lets you do that too. And I'm like, okay, taking the drive, packing it up, send it to WD saying, guys, it's in warranty, it's busted. And they were like, okay. And they replaced it. So yeah, as soon as you get a drive reporting any sort of hard, what I'll call hard errors like that, either I/O errors or, what was this reported as?
Bad sectors. Yeah.
Yeah. Bad sectors, I/O errors, anything like that. As soon as a drive starts reporting that, that drive is dying, in my humble opinion. And you should get the data off as quickly as possible and toss it. Or send it in for warranty and get another one. I'm with you. But I just wanted to stress that, Dave, because that's I would not reformat a drive that reports bad sectors. That to me is a bad strategy.
I mean, you got to be careful of it. I like I said before you interrupted, but what you said is basically what we're in lockstep on this. If it's reporting bad sectors consistently, get away from it. If it reports them once, I will give the drive a second chance, as long as the data that I have on it is somewhere else, right? And reformatting, that's not, if it's to the point, drives should be able to recover on their own from having bad sectors, right? Drives always have, and SSDs are this way too, it's a little bit different on the technology, but drives always have extra blocks that they can auto remap to. Right. So if one goes bad, they just say, oh, we'll use that one. And so if you can get past it and it doesn't report bad sectors again, then you're fine for a while. All drives will die at some point. So that's important to know. But if it's consistently reporting them, or if you feel like you have to reformat to get past that, don't do it. Drives are cheap. Just get another one. But like you said, getting your data off and you could, I don't know if Tidy Up is the right utility. I kind of had it earmarked here, but I don't know if it's the right utility to merge two folders together. Pathfinder actually might be a better one to look at, but Tidy Up, I mean, I think it could do it. It gets dicey. Really what you want to do is actually have iTunes do it. Point iTunes at a new music folder or point it. Yeah. Oh, this is it. Point iTunes at your local hard drive, your home folder. And then I am going to open iTunes because I want to get this right for you. And I hope I don't ruin the world for all of us. So in iTunes, you can, I believe it's in the file menu now. You go to file. Come on, iTunes. Don't make me, and go to library and go to organize library and say consolidate files, check both of those boxes, in other words. If you can, it might be that you can't check the second one because it's already done. But check that first box that says consolidate files. That's going to move everything into your local iTunes folder or whatever you have set as your main iTunes folder. It will copy the data into that. And then you'll know, okay, everything that iTunes knows about is in this folder. And now you can go and delete the drive. That's the best way to merge them. Absolutely. Good. Problem solved.
All right.
Great. That's how we go. It's a little weird doing this from the laptop, John, but that's okay. We'll get there. Hey, I want to talk about Casper. No, not the ghost. Although Casper is my favorite ghost. I want to talk about Casper, the mattress company. They, man, you want to talk about people that know what they're doing. The folks at Casper decided that it's insane that you go for 4 minutes and lay on a mattress in a showroom in your clothes and without any covering or anything on the bed. And you decide, yep, that's the one I want to buy. And then you buy it and you spend like $1,500 and they bring it to your house like 3 weeks later when it's really convenient for them. And then that's it. You know, you have this mattress that you tested for 4 minutes. They thought that was insane. And you know, when you say it like that, it's insane. Why have we been doing this for decades, buying mattresses? Well, it's because Casper hadn't existed yet. So here's the deal. What Casper does is they make killer premium memory foam mattresses. I mean, these are awesome. It's actually a combination of memory foam and latex foam. I have one of these at the house. The memory foam makes the mattress super comfortable in terms of fit and support. And the latex foam is an outer layer that keeps things cool because sometimes memory foam can make you kind of hot and sweaty. Well, the latex foam in between there dissipates that heat and really makes it super comfortable. It's awesome. And they really do a good job with it. And here's the thing. You don't go to a showroom to buy a Casper mattress. You go to casper.com/MGG. And then that'll show you that you can use the coupon code MGG to save $50 off of their already really, I think they're pretty low prices, to be honest. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you order the mattress and it shows up at your house. And it's actually, their box is awesome. They will fit a king size mattress into a box that you can move through any doorway in your home. And then when you get it in there, you open the box. It takes all of about 4 minutes to pop everything open, and then the mattress pops out. And within 90 seconds, the mattress has, you know, kind of poofed up into its normal form, and you're ready to go to sleep at that point, if you like. These mattresses are super comfortable and come with a 100-day free return policy. So that's the thing, is you don't have to do 4 minutes in the store. You do 100 days in your house sleeping. Like you normally use a mattress, you know, not laying on it in your clothes in the middle of the day while there's a zillion people running around. You do it at home, like in a normal way. And if you don't like it, they will come and get it at no charge to you. So this is what you want to do. You want to go to casper.com/MGG and the prices are cheap. You know, you want to, let's start with the most expensive one, $950 for a king size mattress. You shave $50 off of that with that coupon code MGG, right? So now it's $900. You want a queen, $850. Take $50 off. It's $800. You know, you want a twin size, $500. You want to take $50 off of that? Use coupon code MGG. You can do that too. So now you're $450. These are great killer mattresses, and the folks at Casper really know what they're doing there. So you got to check it out. They're obsessive. They're like we are. Except they're making mattresses. So they're obsessive about the way they make these things. They make it so it's just the right sink, just the right bounce. And with coupon code MGG, you save $50 and free shipping. So they're making mattresses that are great quality mattresses, but they're selling them in a way that appeals to people like us, you know, geeks. So you got to check it out. This is Casper at casper.com/MGG. And coupon code MGG saves you $50 off the mattress. All right, John. Let's see. Wow. Let's see where we go next. Let's see. Yeah. Tom, I guess, is where we're going.
Tom?
Here. Yeah.
Yeah, Tom. Tom has a good amount of stuff, and I have some follow-up. So
yeah, so Tom Tom is hitting the trifecta, or the triple crown, if we're going to be...
Triple crown, what? American Pharoah?
I heard that that happened yesterday. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Actually, it happened while we were setting up for the gig. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
All right. So Tom has two questions and a tip. Yeah, I don't follow it either. Well, I'm not going to get into it. All right. So Tom says, I have two questions and a tip. First question, I have a 21.5-inch mid 2010 iMac that I recently blew out the vents with a can of air. Unfortunately, now there is what looks like dust behind the glass of the screen. Is this something that can be easily remedied myself, or should I take it in? Okay, well, I'm going to read everything and then we'll answer your questions. Second question, I've been using the Perian plugin, P-E-R-I-A-N, on my Macs for many years. It's a QuickTime plugin. I've recently found out that it's no longer being supported. That's true. Will it hurt anything leaving Perian installed? And finally, a tip. So you folks get the tip before you hear the answers to the questions. The tip is, a couple episodes back, you mentioned starting up a Mac under verbose mode by holding down Command V. Well, during my latest Onyx maintenance routine, I dug around and noticed an option to boot into verbose mode automatically. I included a screenshot of where to find it. He says, being a geek, I love watching the booting process, and now I can watch it all the time. So you go into parameters inside Onyx, and you go to login, and at the bottom of that that screen is a startup mode dropdown, and you can put it into verbose mode so that you can always see all the stuff scrolling across the screen. You know, that's not a bad idea. It's going to go by quickly, but what's nice is you get a feel for what's there. And if there's ever a problem and you start up in verbose mode, you will see what that problem is, because maybe you'll notice a difference between what you see normally and this. So for us geeks, that's a good thing. All right. Now on to your questions.
Oh, wait, no.
Oh, no.
No, all wait. Right.
Yeah.
No, you got to wait, because Dave, you may ask yourself, what is happening when they do this? And it.
Well, we talked about interest. That, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I just want to offer this as an additional tip here.
Yeah.
So what is actually happening when they do this? And what is happening is that, so there's something on the Mac called NVRAM. And actually, if you go into the terminal and you type man NVRAM, I believe that is the command, it'll tell you about a boatload of options. So what this verbose thing, so actually what Onyx is doing is underneath the covers issuing an NVRAM command saying boot-args equals double quote dash V close double quote. The thing is, what I want to point to, and I found probably one of the better articles about this, is a CNET article. From our buddy here, Topher Kessler. Oh, nice. Man, I got to meet the guy someday. I see so many articles from him. But the thing is, there are so many more things that you can do. And I put it in our chat room and we'll put it in the lovingly handcrafted show notes, Dave. But there are so many boot arguments that you can do, and they are stored again in the Mac's NVRAM. So not only can you specify verbose mode, but you can specify booting into safe mode, booting into single user mode. And then there's a whole slew, I'm not even going to go into the detail here, of all sorts of other things you can do here. One that kind of shocked me is that you can actually set the maximum amount of memory that the Mac sees. So be careful here. So it's powerful. Onyx gives you a safe way to do this, but there are ways where if you want to dig deeper, you can do that as well. So number one, read this article. Number two, do a man page, go into terminal and do a man NVRAM. And you may be, if you're geeky, you may be surprised at all the things you can do here.
Sweet. Good stuff, man. All right. So now, if I can get back to Topher's question. As for the screen.
You mean Tom.
Tom. Sorry. Yeah, Topher Tom. Didn't write. That's right. Tom. Yeah, man. See, dude, 4 hours of sleep.
Jet lag. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I get it.
No, I don't even think jet lag has kicked in yet. This is just lack of sleep. Right. But anyway, Topher, Tom. Hey, I'm Dave. How you doing?
Hi, Dave. This is John. What's going on, man?
Pleasure to meet you.
Hey, let's talk about Tom.
Oh, hey, yeah, I remember Tom. You know, so the screen with the dust behind it, it's really easy to take that off as long as you use suction cups. It's actually pretty cool. You get these suction cups, you put them in the opposite corners of the screen, and you pop it off. It's held on by magnets, and it's got little pins to keep them in, and it comes off really easily. Be aware that you're pulling off a large sheet of glass, so think about where you're going to put it after you take it off. You can take the glass off and put it face down or face up with the suction cups up, because those little pins, it will sit on it and it won't crush under its own weight. So, but just be aware that you're going to have this large piece of glass. I mean, it's a 21.5 inch diagonal piece of glass. It's easy to take off. But here's the thing. Once you take it off, you actually have two glass surfaces that you have to clean the dust off of before you put it back. Number one is the inside of that screen that you just took off, the outer layer. The other is the actual screen of your machine. So this outer layer is really a protective layer, I guess. And so you have to clean the inside of that before you put it back on, and your actual screen, which is right behind it. This is a process that I've been through it more often than I want. My daughter and I have gotten very good at it. I wet a paper towel, like make it damp, or a cloth is actually better than paper towel, and go through and just get like the bulk of the dust off. And then you kind of want to polish it so you're not leaving streaks. And this is the same for both surfaces. And then you hold your breath so that you're not blowing any dust around in the room, and you use the suction cups to put it back on, and then you inspect. And you've gotten it wrong. There's still a speck of dust. So you pull it off and you wipe it clean, and then you put it back on. And you've still gotten it wrong. You got to pull it off again. Now, I asked the geniuses at the Genius Bar at the Apple Store the last time I had one of my iMacs and how they did this. And they use a silicone roller to get the dust off, which is probably a much better thing. Yep. I think that you can get them from Amazon for like 10 or 15 bucks. I'm going to get one. But here's the secret I'm going to tell you. I put one of my screens back on one of my 21.5 inch iMacs with a ton of dust behind it, because I wanted to test this computer. We were having some problems with it, and I figured I'm not going to go through the headache of dealing with this until I know that it's going to survive and we want to keep it. And then I'll just pop it off again. There's no screws. You just pull it right off. It's magnets. And I still haven't cleaned it, because even with all that dust in there that I saw with my own two eyes, with the power off, and I can still see, when I turn the power on, I don't see it. Now, that's not going to be the case with every bit of dust and particle back there. There's going to be some that, like in your case, Tom, that you're going to see, and you got to clean those off. But you don't have to be as obsessive as you might think, or at least that's what I've learned. So that's question number one.
To add to that.
Yeah, go.
Number one, I would strongly discourage anybody from... I'm not a big fan of using compressed air to service computers, Dave. I would much rather, and personally, when I have to remove dust from something, I much prefer to use a brush versus compressed air. Problems I see with compressed air, number one, you can kind of lose control in that it's crazy. Number two, when it's coming out, because compressed air, it's cold. And it may thermally impact the surface that you're affecting. So I personally would much prefer one using a brush versus compressed air to clear dust out of something. Okay? That's just me.
Yeah.
I don't know your feelings. Number two.
Well, I have humidity. I have moisture-free breath, so I can just blow on any electronic and I'm able to clean it without risking anything.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, no, it's great. Yep, it's a gift.
Number two. As far as the iMac, the caution I will add, so actually you've worked on them, and also I have with my pal Duffy. We actually, I just saw him today. So his wife's computer, we, you know, popped it open. The only thing I would caution people about, so in addition to your caution, Dave, is that you're dealing with a big piece of glass, and glass can be sharp, is also my friend Jody, who I think listens, and I talk to her every now and then, and she does a computer service, is you also have sharp metal edges. Be very careful once you have your iMac open that you don't cut yourself and bleed to death. Seriously, there are sharp edges that you want to be very careful of. So you can certainly work on the iMac and, you know, go to iFixit or another, and they probably warn you about this already, but just be careful when you go in an iMac. It's brilliant in the way that they put it together with the magnets and stuff like that, but, you know, if it can be, you got to be careful working on these things. That's all I'm going to add there.
That's all you're going to say, isn't it? Sweet. All right.
For now.
As far as parrying goes, Tom, it's been deprecated. I think certainly pre-Yosemite it was deprecated. Parrying is a collection of QuickTime plugins to allow QuickTime to process videos of different types that it doesn't natively process. That whole project has been abandoned and end of life. You can keep running it if it's not causing you any trouble, and if it begins causing you trouble, then stop running it. But yeah, there are people that I know of that are still running it, and it's running fine. So you're okay for now, but it's probably best to move on from it. So
personally, Dave, I got to say that I actually tossed it because it's unsupported, and to avoid it fighting with other things, I actually, again, tossed it on both my machines here, and I've used other things. So, of course, Parrying would let you play non-Apple video formats, and I don't know if you want to offer something here, but right now I use Flip for Mac. I mean, the only renegade here, so the major video types that I deal with are QuickTime, which, of course, Apple supports, Flash, which of course you can play, and then you have the WMV or the Windows Media, and for that I use Flip for Mac, which now I think they actually, you know, want to squeak a little money out of you to play that back. Though I think the other option, Dave, is VLC. I guess be the other option.
That's what I
to
use.
Play those.
I use VLC, okay. And VLC is fantastic.
Open source. Plays almost every. I guess the only reason I removed it, Dave, is because, again, it's unsupported, and once you get to future versions of the OS with something that worked on prior versions, you know, as we talked about, there's conflicts, there's cruft, and whatever. So I guess that's my advice on that, is I on all my machines, I've removed it because I don't want to start debugging Parrying versus whatever conflicts.
Yep.
That's just me.
And on iOS, you can't run plugins anyway. VLC has come and gone and come back again, I think, and they say it's going to be here now for the duration on iOS. But I, in the interim, while they were doing all their bouncing, I really got enamored with Infuse 3 or Infuse from FireCore. They're up to version 3 now. Mm-hmm. It's awesome for playing back videos that wouldn't otherwise play back
really?
In a native form on iOS. Oh, it's so good. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, I'll I mean, it processes in real time, it processes sound. So if you've got if you have a movie with only DTS sound on it and try to play it on iOS, you won't hear noise. I mean, just nothing. But if you play it on iOS inside of Infuse, you get all the sound. It does everything on the fly. They really know what they're doing. So, that's my pitch there is Infuse on iOS.
Sweet.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Philip. Philip says, following a tip from the podcast, I set up a number of text shortcuts via the keyboard bit of Yosemite in System Preferences. They sync nicely to my iPhone. However, now I want to delete them, but I can't. If I delete them from the Mac, the iPhone pulls them back in, and vice versa. It's driving me nuts. Any thoughts? Yeah. Welcome to iCloud. No, well, yes. So here's the deal. Yeah, iCloud syncing of things like this, and even syncing of things like airport networks. I went through on my Mac and cleaned out a ton of airport networks that I wasn't going to use and all that, and they all came back on all my platforms. I'd never want to connect to Logan Wi-Fi again. It's a disaster when I'm in the airport. If I try to check my email, it tries to, it's like, oh, you're on Logan Wi-Fi. It's like, no, I have more LTE data than I know what to do with, And I'm okay using it when I'm in Logan Airport. I just don't want to go through it.
Can't you just go to that part of system preferences and remove it from the list of preferred networks?
That's what I said I did, didn't I? And it comes back and I go onto my phone and I say, forget this network. And I guarantee you on Wednesday night, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. So this morning, you can tell that this is a hot topic for me today because I was trying to check my email or do something. And it's like, oh, yada, yada. You got to watch this video. No, I'm going to turn off Wi-Fi. That's it. Wi-Fi's off. Because I tried, and so I went in and I went into the system preferences or preferences on iOS. And, of course you can't see it in there, you know, because they don't let you see the whole list of networks, but you go to settings. And if the network's there, you highlight it and you say, forget this network. You turn off auto join and all of that stuff. Yep. And then I guarantee it's
great.
When I'm there at midnight or 2 a.m. or whatever it is on Wednesday, when my stupid plane lands after I've dealt with being here all week or half the week, it's going to try and connect me again. I guarantee it. And there's just no way around it. So, but anyway, that's that, isn't it? But as far as your problem, Philip, now that I've ranted about mine, here's what I have found. These on your Mac are stored in your home folder, library, mobile documents. Now, you also know this folder in your Finder sidebar as the iCloud folder. It is the iCloud Drive folder. It is where all of this stuff is stored in talking about your keyboard shortcuts here. But there is a folder within that that is now obscured from you in the Finder. So you either need to use a Finder replacement like Pathfinder, or you need to go to the terminal, because the folder you want to look into is the com-apple-text-input folder. And the only capitals in that are T and I in text input. The first T in text input, that is, the other two remain low. So there's a lot of different ways of trying to, what you're going to do is you're going to delete that folder, or you can delete the I think it's the database thing inside it, but you can delete the whole folder. It's fine. You want to delete it until it's dead, because it will start to come back, because again, these are synced everywhere. I've found for me, because I've been through this exact thing, disable iCloud Drive on your Mac, then delete that home, library, mobile documents, com, Apple text input folder, then re-enable iCloud Drive. Now, this is where it gets weird. Go to your iPhone and just restart it. Don't try to mess around with anything. Just restart your iPhone. In theory, that will cause it to pull from the cloud as opposed to pushing to the cloud. When you edit this folder on your Mac, it will push the change to the cloud, meaning it's removed the folder. If you leave things alone, your phone is going to push its version back, and now you're stuck in this loop of everything coming back around. So that's the trick. But it can be tricky, and sometimes you got to do it 6 times to get it to work right. That's what I got for you. It's a disaster. iCloud. Apple is bad at cloud syncing. This is just a truth of the universe. They've tried it 3 different times under 3 different names at least.
Right. And MobileMe.
Was it MobileMe first? No, it was .Mac first.
Ah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Then MobileMe, and now iCloud, and it's the same crap, different name. And there's no lipstick on this pig. It's bad. And it's just bad. Listen, Apple's great. They made CalDAV. I could rant about CalDAV. I'm actually involved in this other project that's made me realize interesting things about how people interpret standards, but that's not Apple's fault. They did great with CalDAV. It works great. They did great with CardDAV for syncing your contacts. They're pretty decent with IMAP. It's certainly better than Google. But when it comes to syncing documents in the cloud, they have a flawed foundation there and a flawed belief of how that should be done, and it just doesn't work. But that's, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. Deal with it. It's fine.
Sometimes it does. And the thing is, I think sometimes they try to guess what you want, because I've had times where I've had a device that I've logged into using Wi-Fi, and then I have another device and it logs in automatically. And I'm like, wow, that's what I wanted. but sometimes it's not.
That's right. Yeah. And it's fine. It's just how it goes, you know.
What you mentioned though is interesting, Dave, because I did what you suggested. I went into the terminal, and oh my gosh, the stuff in that directory, that you don't see if you click on iCloud Drive is amazing. Yep. Oh my gosh. So, yep. So for the geeks out there, yeah, go to your home directory, the library mobile documents, I think it is. And you'll be shocked at the things that you see there if you go in the terminal versus the Finder. It's like you suggested, I looked at that and I'm like, why are they hiding this from me? Maybe good reasons, maybe bad reasons, but back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just Apple has this belief that, and it started with Steve Jobs, that we don't need a file structure. The cloud should just be this magic thing that does what we want. And like you said, interprets or it guesses at our desires and fulfills them. And lottie, magic, sprinkle, fairy dust, unicorns. And it just doesn't work. Yeah.
Not always.
Sometimes it syncs what you want, but it's a methodology, I believe it's just flawed. But it's okay. It keeps us in business here. It's all fine. I do, though, want to take the moment and speak highly, in fact, of our third sponsor for the show, which is Smile. Smilesoftware.com/geek will always get you to the current promotion related to this show. Smile has been, they were the first company ever to sponsor this show almost 10 years ago. And
really?
Yep. Wow. And they have never stopped. Hear that clearly. They have never stopped. They are the only sponsor where that is true. It's awesome. We have great sponsors. Every single sponsor we have is fantastic. Smile, they sit at the top of that list because of that. So what we get to talk about this month is one of they make the great part about Smile and why it works for them to continually sponsor podcasts like this, and they sponsor many, is because they have so many great utilities. So we can talk about different ones all the time. PDF Pen Pro 7. That's what we get to talk about this month. And here's the thing. PDF Pen Pro is the advanced version of PDF Pen, which you've heard us talk about. That's, you know, the all-purpose PDF editor that Smile makes. It allows you to do all kinds of things. You can actually manipulate text in a PDF. You can do all kinds of stuff. You can change pages around. You can add comments to it. You can even build PDFs from multiple documents. It's just awesome. So PDF Pen Pro does everything that PDF Pen does, like adding signatures, right? You know, which is something I take for granted with PDF Pen, and I use it constantly. I have a little library that has my signature, and then I've got another one that has my full name, because usually when you sign something, they want you to print or type your name below it. And so I have both, and I just drag them in and I'm done. I don't have to think about it. I save the document. I send it off. And of course, those sync from the Mac in my library to my iOS devices. So I can sign contracts from my iOS devices with my signature, and it's really easy and I don't have to think about it. So PDF Pen Pro does that too, in addition to everything else. And it'll export in Microsoft Word format. However, PDF Pen Pro add some features that you don't get in PDF Pen. That's why they call it Pro. It allows you to create interactive PDF forms, which are very cool. You've filled out forms. You can do that in PDF Pen. If you want to create forms for other people to fill out, PDF Pen Pro is for you. You can build a table of contents with it. You can set document permissions in a PDF with PDF Pen Pro. And you can convert websites into multi-page PDFs. This is very cool. The new PDF Pen Pro version 7 adds easy editing of OCR text, scanned text that it then converts into editable text, as well as you can export in not just Word, but Excel, PowerPoint, and PDF archive formats. So you got to check it out. Smilesoftware.com/geek is where you're going to get all of that stuff. It'll sync your PDFs with PDF Pen for iPad and iPhone, and it uses iCloud Drive. And guess what? This part of iCloud Drive actually works. So you're going to be really happy about that. You can touch up OCRs. You know, if it scans it and it gets some text wrong, you can fix that. And you can, of course, export them into all kinds of things. So PDF Pen Pro 7.1 can set tooltips for form fields. So when people float over it, they know what you want. It allows you to do all that stuff. So you got to check it out. PDF Pen Pro 7 requires Yosemite. Check it out. Smilesoftware.com/geek is the way to go. And that's where we are with that. I guess, we talked about keyboard shortcuts, John, and I want to come back around to that because, we have a note from Bill that I believe kind of comes back around. Bill writes, here's a supplement to your motto. Don't get caught. I had to reset my iPhone and when all was said and done, my keyboard shortcuts were gone. I remembered somewhere hearing that there was a fix for this, so I set about Googling, and I found suggestions to turn off predictive text on my iPhone, toggle iCloud drive on and off, sign in and out of iCloud, reset my iPhone, reset my iPhone, and of course, the obvious, which I tried first, add a new snippet and wait for iCloud to sync. That is actually a good piece of advice. It did not work for Bill in this particular example, but that is excellent, excellent advice. Forcing it to sync that particular set of data can often help. But in Bill's case, none of this worked. He said this took up most of a very frustrating day, at the end of which I was ready to yell at Apple support. But then it occurred to me that I don't have that many snippets. I mainly use one for my email address. So why was I going through all this pain? So I just re-entered the data on my phone and all was well. So he says his corollary or perhaps addendum to don't get caught is don't be stupid. Don't spend a day trying to solve a problem that you can solve by simply typing in one line of data. But I get it, Bill. We have all been there. You are in very good company. Welcome to the club. We have jackets. We want our technology to work the way it's supposed to work, not just work the way we need it to work. And sometimes that means wasting a day doing crazy things like you did. So, but his point is valid. Sometimes you just punt and solve the problem. That's what I got.
What I got, Dave, is a final tip.
Yeah, go.
And I actually have it in my Twitter bio. Have you tried? You and I have actually called it this. Toto. Turn off. Turn on. It makes me sad that that's the way to solve so many problems, but sometimes it's what you got to do. Right?
Yeah. You know. Sometimes it is what you have to do. Yeah, it is.
But again, right. It makes me sad because that shouldn't be how you have to solve a problem. Power cycling is not the right way to solve a problem, but sometimes it's the only way to solve a problem.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
If what we tell you to do doesn't work, turn everything off and then turn it back on again and it'll work great.
Sure. That works. I want to jump to Frank if that's okay, John.
Oh, Frank here?
Yeah,
oh,
Frank.
Frank is down there. Frank says, okay, yeah, I'm with Frank.
I was wondering if you may be able to advise anything on the best method of securing my email. Specifically, what I mean is what cryptographic service provider you use. I've just opened an account with Komodo.com, and there appears to be a number of different options. Thanks for your work, as always. So what Frank means is where should he go and get his certificate from? And we'll put a link in the show notes. Allison Sheridan at Podfeet.com, of course, host of the Nozilla cast. She put together a killer tutorial on how to create and set up secure email for your Mac and also for iOS. And as part of that process, you have to go and get a new, you have to get a certificate that allows you to secure your email. And Komodo is one provider. Start SSL is another. You can get them from GoDaddy, and some of these are free. In fact, the first two are definitely allow free certificates. The GoDaddy, I don't believe they do, but there's all kinds of them out there. And but it doesn't change anything about how your email is encrypted. So your email is being encrypted by your computer. The certificate that you're using to encrypt it, well, it does. It sets the level of encryption, because you can say, I want a 1024 byte or a 2048 byte key or a 4096 byte key. But other than that, it doesn't change much about the encryption. It's still software on your computer that's doing it, and it's using a standard protocol to put it all together. S/MIME is kind of the wrapper for that whole protocol. But that's it doesn't matter where you get the certificate from. In fact, you could create your own certificate right in Apple's keychain utility. If you do that, the only problem is people that see your certificate or see encrypted emails or signed emails from you will get a little note, most likely, saying that that certificate is self-signed, right? It's not tied to any certificate authority. So there's no way of saying they essentially what it says is this email is signed with this certificate, but we have no way of proving that this certificate belongs to anyone in particular because it was created by someone that didn't go through a certificate authority. And what the certificate authorities let you do is they confirm your identity. And depending on the level that you get, it usually for email certificates, they just email you the cert. So what they mean is, yes, the person that has this certificate has proven that they are able to get email at that account. Doesn't mean they're the only person to get email at that account, but they are at least one of them, right? So, you know, it's worth getting a free cert, even though it means you got to recreate it every year. But that's all that means. So, it really doesn't matter who you get it from. They're all the same in that sense. I hear you humming and hawing over there. So you're going
to
say something.
I would have to disagree for individual usage. So if you're a John or a Dave or anybody in our chat room, hi guys, getting a free certificate from somebody like the one that I have, Dave, and I think you have, and I think you mentioned them, is Komodo. Okay, they're swell. I think they're over in the UK, if I'm not mistaken. They're across the pond there. And that's cool. And as you said, the verification that they provide is, okay, you apply for a certificate, we email you back a certificate, and if you respond accordingly, this confirms that you exist at this email. I would argue that once you get beyond that, you may want to look at somebody. Like, for example, now a number of years ago when I was doing the corporate thing, VeriSign was a big deal, and they're still, I think, but they were acquired by Symantec. So if you're looking at deploying certificates, improving identity, and all that great stuff for more people than yourself, you may want to look beyond, though I'm sure Komodo offers these services, but I looked through Symantec's website and they actually do offer management, and so they offer email certs in addition to SSL certs, which, you know, are the same but they're different, but they also offer higher level services. So I would say, depending on your needs, if it's beyond proving I am who I say I am, then you may want to do a little bit more homework. That's what I'm going to offer.
Right. I mean, if you're securing your own personal email, it just doesn't matter. It's like, you know, it just
whoever offers a cert. Well, no, whoever offers a cert that has a certificate that is in Apple's keychain, which Komodo does, and all that, and it doesn't bring up the self-signed alert, then yeah, I'm with you. But if you're going beyond that, especially on an enterprise level, then you may want to. I want to spend a little time researching who offers these services.
Totally agree.
And again, I'm sure Komodo does, though if you're a US business, you may not want to deal with, you may not want to do this with a business that is not based in the US.
Right. So, right. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But, it was great. I mean, he sent us an email and it came into our, Mackie Gab email box, and it came in as encrypted and it didn't set off any alerts. And we're like, okay, well, you made a good choice. Yeah. Frank, was it Frank?
I think we use Komodo for ours as well, John. So
yeah, we do. And the only thing we have to do, and that's why I suggest, so if you're looking for, services beyond the only downside, Dave, I mean, for us, it works great, but the only thing is you and I have to remember that we have to renew them around August because they expire, right. and then when that happens, anything we send to people will bring up a flag in almost any email program saying, oh, well, by the way, the person that sent you this, their cert is expired, and yeah, you may not want to trust them.
And at that point, it's a pain in the neck for us, because not only do we have to renew the cert, one of us does, only one of us does, which is important. And so we need to coordinate, but John and I are pretty good at that. And then we have to share it with each other, hopefully not with anyone else, so that you folks aren't out there sending email signed as, you know, feedback or premium at MacGeekCamp.com. And then, and then we have to remember to put it on all of our computers, right? Because every computer needs a different one. So it's fine. It works great. You know, the other way to do it is to go and get GPG tools for Mac and secure your email that way. But the issue with that is every certificate with PGP, which is what GPG tools uses, is self-signed. So that's one issue with that. And so you need to just trust, which is, I think, a better way of doing it, to be honest. But you just need to trust or get the certificate from someone in a way that you trust that it really came from them. So that's one problem with using PGP on the Mac. The other is that it's not natively supported by any Apple product. So if you put your certs on your iPhone, which you and I have, John, we can get encrypted email to our iPhones for our Mac Geek Gab accounts and read them there.
PGP support is a pain in the ass on iOS.
You've got to
be very blunt.
No, you've got to copy the text of the message, move into a different, you know, client app on iOS, and because there's no plugin, right? You know, on the Mac, GPG Tools is essentially a plugin for mail, and it sort of does all this stuff in the background, and it works great. It's awesome. It's fun. But on iOS, and I've done it, Pete occasionally sends me, Pilot Pete. How you doing, Pilot Pete? I haven't seen you in a while. He occasionally sends me PGP encrypted stuff, and it's like, ah, oh, dude, and then I have to jump over, and it's okay, it's fine, I have our PGP keys and it's all fine. All right, go ahead. Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, we'll jump to Todd.
I mean, all right, so the difference between the two models, so S/MIME, the thing is, all right, so we talked about the self-signed thing. The thing is, if you have a cert that's signed by somebody that Apple knows about, then everything's pretty cool. The thing to be aware of, and you know, we'll find an article that we did a while ago, or Allison's thing. PGP is more of a circle of trust model, which I would say, Dave, is that rather than looking to a higher power like Komodo or whoever signing something and then the computer saying, yeah, this is okay, PGP or GPG relies on you kind of inherently trusting or marking in your keychain, okay, I trust that this thing I got from Dave Hamilton is Dave Hamilton, so I'm going to mark it as trusted. And so it's a different model, and actually I think you were suggesting, I kind of like that model better, because sometimes some of these guys don't do a very good job of authenticating who cert they sign. Whereas if it's a model of individuals, so I guess all I'm saying is PGP, consider it as an option, but again, I think it's not very well supported on the Mac. On Mac OS 10 it is. On iOS, I really think it isn't. Yeah. And
I totally agree. Yeah, you have to buy third-party software to make it work right.
And it kind of sucks. So, but even the S/MIME support, Dave, in iOS, last I checked, is still not that great. Sometimes I have certs on my iPhone, Dave, and I try to send you something encrypted, and it's like,
receiving encrypted on the iPhone is fine. And I'm like,
wait, no. I'm like, I have Dave's cert in my profile, and I try to send you something encrypted, and it's like, who's Dave Hamilton? And I'm like,
can't. It doesn't
work. What's wrong with you? They still haven't fixed it. No. Maybe, you know what? At WWDC,
you know what you should do, John? You're a registered developer. File a bug.
You know what? You're at WWDC.
I'm
not. Shake your fist.
No. I don't have a ticket for WWDC.
Should go in there anyways and shake your fist and say, guys, can you fix S/MIME on iOS, please?
They won't let me in.
I'd like you to do that.
They won't let me in.
Come on, dude. They actually Dave won't Hamilton.
Let me in. Yeah. That's part of why they won't let me in. Todd, save us from this.
Hi, John and Dave. Dave and John. This is Todd from Northern California, Rockland. And I have a question about Apple Mail. When I am using Apple Mail, I sometimes am going through my inbox or my unread box, and I am deleting or archiving mails so quickly that it seems like the system doesn't have time to figure out that I have, quote unquote, read the mail. And so I end up having all of these unread records, unread mails in both my archive box and in my deleted file or deleted area. So my question is there some sort of way, I don't know if Mail Acton or something else that I can use that would make it so that if a mail is put into a certain mailbox, it is automatically marked as read. Thanks, guys. I appreciate the show. This is where you cut me off.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Yeah. I don't think there's a way of having the mailbox that it is in be the trigger for that. However, I think you're right that Mail Acton is the right way to do this, because what you can do right now, you have, say, the, you know, mail's archive function that just lets you put things in your archive. But Mail Acton lets you create a script or a rule that is a series of steps. And one of those steps can be to mark a message as read. So you can mark it as read and then file it in your archive. And that might be the way to do it. But I will say this. It's mail.app that we're talking about here, and it has gotten very sucky in this regard lately. I've been having this problem with mail app too. Yeah, that's an official term. It constantly is leaving things unread. If you open up, if you go to the window menu in mail and go to activity, it will show you what mail is up to, and it often has, like, you know, about 4 billion IMAP connections open at any one time, sometimes 3 billion if it's a light day. And because of that, the server just starts rejecting information from it. And a lot of times what happens is when it's changing flags, which is where the read and unread status are stored, it just does away with those. And so you're back to when it finally resyncs with the server says, oh, no, that message is unread. And so it does that for you. So try it with Mail Acton. That would be the right thing. I had a conversation with Scott at Mail Acton recently about this exact problem, unrelated to what you're talking about, Todd. It was just, you know, yet another issue. And he and I both shared similar non-show friendly sentiments about Mail App and where it has gotten, especially with regards to talking to IMAP servers. So Mail Acton would be the right thing, but I'm still not convinced. Mail should send that message and is sending that message. It's just probably doing it in a way that it should batch things more. Thunderbird is a mail client that is a third-party mail client. It's created by the Mozilla Foundation, the people that make Firefox. And one of the settings in there that I think mail really needs to let us tweak, either with a terminal, like a defaults command from the terminal or with a menu widget, is the number of simultaneous IMAP connections that it will create to any one server. And I really feel like if we could do that in mail and limit it down, it would make a huge, huge difference, because you can do this in Thunderbird and it really, you know, it's very reliable. Sometimes it takes a little time for it to queue up all these things and make all these changes to the IMAP server that you want, but that's what needs to happen. So that's my feeling on that, John.
I respect your feelings, Dave, but I'm going to introduce my feelings on this.
All right.
Is that I did some surfing and I found an article and it was amazing. The title of the article, Dave, is Apple Scripts for Marking Messages as Read in Mac Mail. Uh-huh. And it's funny because this article actually starts with the line saying, at the request of Mac Sparky, I've put together a few Apple scripts for Mac Mail users. Of course, Mac Sparky being our good friend David Sparks, who is a powerful force in the Mac community, I think, still. Yeah. But anyways, this is an article, which I put in our chat room and we'll put in the lovingly handcrafted show notes, that indicates, that tells you how to write an Apple script to do a number of things. And quickly, the three scripts in this article are mark all inbox messages read. All right. Well, that's not what we want. Mark all messages read. That's not what we want. But then mark selected mailbox messages as read. So I believe if you're into Apple Script, and of course, Apple Script comes free with the Mac, and you look at this code and you have a coding mindset, I think you probably could write an Apple script that would do close to, if not exactly, what you want.
And that's but it still wouldn't work, Dave. I mean, it all of these things that we're talking about, mail, when you highlight a message, it should, you know, not... The problem isn't getting mail to think that it's the message is read. The problem is getting mail to successfully communicate that read status to the server in a way that the server accepts it. And all of these things, the Apple scripts you found, they're great, right? That mail act on. It's great. Mail in and of itself does this. And then it doesn't sync this information with the server. And then it comes back. So
no, I get it. What I'm suggesting is this: an Apple script may be able to force the issue. I don't think so.
It's just going to the Apple script is going to tell mail that the message is read, and then from there, it's up to mail to negotiate with the server, and that's where the problem is. Yeah.
So you're identifying an inherent flaw in mail that cannot be fixed by any human.
Correct. Well, way to fix it would be to have to go in, like if it's iCloud Mail, you go to the iCloud web interface. If it's Gmail, you go to the Gmail web interface. And from there, you tell it the message is read. And that way you're telling the server something that way that the server is going to accept. Mail is just really bad at telling IMAP servers specifically these types of things, the flags on a message.
Okay.
I don't know why that is, but it's just... Yeah. You know, it's
all right. I would respectfully disagree. I think if you tell it enough times, it'll get it.
If you tell it enough times, of course. No, I do it all the time, buddy. I have to tell a message like 3 times. I got to float over it, and it finally
gets it. You're red. Now I get it. Okay. Yeah, exactly. No, I see what you're saying. Again, that was my suggestion that you could automate this to some level.
To some level. Yeah.
Yeah. And you brought the band to say, wow. You brought the band to San Francisco? Outstanding. Hey
man, we're a class operation here.
Yeah, last I checked, we are.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's all kinds of things to go through here. Feedback@MacGeekGab.com, though, is the way for you to send in your questions, your tips, anything you've got going on. Please.
I agree.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to write to a class operation, Dave, I would send an email to feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
Well, feedback@MacGeekGab.com is the right address to use unless you want to send mail and you are a premium subscriber. And, of course, then you can use premium@MacGeekGab.com. Of course, our thanks, as always, go out to everyone who listens. And a special thanks to all of our premium subscribers who really do. They help you help us keep the lights on. You help make things like this, you know, this trip to WWDC possible, all of that stuff. It's very much appreciated, and thank you.
And it gives you and us that warm, fuzzy feeling.
Well, to be honest, you know, we're sponsoring this SF Mac Indie thing tonight. We're sponsoring the next event tomorrow night, and you know, that kind of stuff is in part made possible by you know how you're able to help us. So we do pay it forward when we can, and we also. Also pay our mortgages with it. I mean, it helps us, you know, create the time to do what it is that we do for you every week. So check it out. MacGeekGab.com is where you can start to learn about being a premium subscriber if, in fact, you want to do that. Pulling up my agenda here. And after I did the Smile software spot, I realized that my peas were popping quite a bit. So now I am doing what I do in the studio, John, which, of course, is what I should be doing all the time. And that is talking across the microphone and not into it so that you don't need a pop filter. That. I know I taught you that. I know. And you even mentioned it to me before we started the show. And I don't know why I didn't do it. But anyway,
you're exhausted, Dave.
Well, there's that.
You should take a little nap.
I can't because I got SF Mac Indy starts in, or Showstopper starts in 59 minutes. Hey, actually, they both start. That's the problem.
You can take, you can take a power nap, a half hour power nap.
If I do that, it's going to be 4 hours.
You won't, you won't wake up.
Not at this stage. 206.
You may need some caffeine, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. 206-666-GEEK is the phone number you can call, John, and GEEK is?
4335.
You can leave us a message there, and we would love to hear from you if you do. We got some new iTunes reviews this week, and I wanted to read a few of them, but if you haven't done one for us yet, please, we would love to have you go in and do one. We got Tastes Like Wookie from the USA wrote, no matter if you're a noob or an experienced user, John and Dave speak your language. A few good Mac-related podcasts have come and gone, but I'm glad these two just keep going. One of my many favorite things about them is that even if you're not a premium subscriber, they answer your email questions fast and friendly and have gotten me out of a few jams. Keep up the great work, guys. It's true. We do. Sam Tagri from the Netherlands writes, what John and Dave do every week is magical. They go into details solving OS X and iOS mysteries, often while geeking out with their vast technical experience. Amazingly, they do this with lighthearted back and forth that manages to make me chuckle every now and then. And lastly, Barry F. from the USA says, I've been listening to John and Dave and Pilot Pete for many, many years. This is one of the first podcasts I discovered when I switched to OS X, and I continue to put this at the top of any list of must-listen-to shows. Their technical knowledge, wit, and savvy make this enjoyable and educational each week. Don't get caught without them. So take Barry's advice. Please do go leave a review for us. We would very much appreciate it. And thanks to all of you who have left us reviews. Also, thanks to Michael Johnston at the iOS Show podcast. Michael creates the enhanced AAC with the chapters for you and for us each week. So thank you so much, Michael. We appreciate it. Also, thanks to CashFly at CacheFly.com because they provide all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And of course, our podcast marketplace includes things like iMazing at iMazing.com. MGG gets you, I believe, 20% off there. Gazelle.com, they've been sponsoring us for a while as well. SmileSoftware.com/geek, as we mentioned in the show. Lynda.com, LYNDA.com/MGG. And Squarespace.com/MGG, all through Backbeat Media. Thank you so much, folks. Appreciate you sticking with us through this travel show. It seems like it worked out all right. John, do you have any lasting advice for all of us?
I think for you and for everyone else, Dave, but number one, I'm glad you got through the airport and through TSA, which indicates to me that you didn't get caught.
Made up.